Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 74 of the Picos Reality podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson. And joining me in the orange shirt, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
Supporting FC Bayern merch.
Yes, of course.
Of course. And this week, we are going to be talking about the first week of 9.1. Like, 9.1 has arrived. And that means that all of the PTR stuff we've been talking and speculating about over the past 2 months is on live servers, and in some cases, still being changed, which we'll talk a little bit about. But 9.1 is here, and that is what we are going to be talking about today.
Yeah, so before we get into it, Emelson, one question, just real quick. In one word, how would you describe your first week experience in 9.1? One word.
Chill.
Yeah, right. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have said uninteresting would have been my word, but yes, chill also works.
Like, if I compare this to the release of patch 8.2, which I think is the most comparable patch in BFA, 8.2 was crazy doing it, like grinding AP, grinding reps in order to get the essences. Just like huge amounts of grinds pulling you in like every different direction. Like, you needed to do PvP for that one, and you needed to do Mechagon for the other one, and you needed to do Nashatar for the Benthic gear.
Yeah.
So you were doing like four or five different grinds that were like really, really impactful on your character power. As opposed to now, where like there's two things you can grind, there are two reps you can grind. But the only thing you get from them is sockets. And there are other sources of sockets this patch. So it doesn't feel like I'm not, even if there weren't other sources of sockets, they're so bad for Brewmaster that like I wouldn't feel compelled to go and grind it. Like, I'll get there when I get there.
Yeah.
But especially since you can get sockets from Torghast, I'm like not very interested in grinding that rep.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, it was, I would agree. It's been very, very low key in terms of like got pretty much everything I need to do in like day one. And now it's just been like a couple of dailies. So been very, very nice. So cool. Well, yeah, I guess we'll get into sort of a quick recap of last week. I just wanted to get a quick start the episode off. How we feeling type question out there. So yeah, like you mentioned in the intro, there have been a ton of hot fixes this week. So we'll run through sort of maybe the major ones, and then we'll sort of talk about sort of, I think, mostly like the stuff we've been doing this week in terms of 9.1 and things like that. So first up, of course, there was the Great Vault hotfix, which it's just so funny. So Blizzard, you know, as the patch launched, you started sort of trying to collect gear out of your Great Vault. They sort of screwed up the formula about what gear you should and shouldn't be getting based on last week. So they disabled the Great Vault, and it's the funniest thing is the way they disabled it is they just literally removed the doodad that the Great Vault is.
The Great Vault went away for like a day.
Yeah, which was funny. They left all the geometry in, so like you'd still like walk up the little ramp to it, and you'd see people sort of floating there in Orbos. But yeah, so they removed the Great Vault for a day or two to fix it. So that was good.
Did you get anything from your vault?
I didn't actually get a chance to click it before they disabled it. But I did get, I did eventually get my items, but yeah, I didn't get a chance to click it early. So
I got Stygia when I eventually got to click it.
Nice. Yeah. I think I got also Stygia, like, something.
I'm not sure what I expect at this point in the patch, to be totally honest, but
yeah, it's been a long one. So Great vault hotfixes. I feel like we go through this sort of loot thing. We've gone through it, I feel like, every major patch since, like, they introduced it in, what, BFA, right? So it's just like, maybe they should, like, test this. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they're testing, but it seems a little weird. This. Yeah, that's for sure. We did get some other hotfixes over the course of the week. A bunch of hotfixes, actually, to Corthia. Some of them being like the treasures now last a little longer. So we'll probably talk about this in a little bit more detail when we talk about Corthia, but there's treasures everywhere in Corthia. You want to click them because they contain items for like the rep and for quests and stuff like that. But they were only lasting about 5 to 10 seconds after one person clicked it. And a lot of them are in trees and like in like some geometry puzzle, like jumping puzzle places. And it's always fun as you're trying to jump up that tree, watching somebody do it before you clicking it. And then as soon as you get up there, it despawning you as you have like the little cast bar to open it up. So. Right.
Or people doing stuff in the Rift where there's like 4 caches in there that you can get every day. And like when you go in there with a group, like literally having the coordinate, you know, okay, nobody click it until everybody's here. Now everybody click it because it only lasts for 5 seconds.
Yeah. I feel like going back to tuber farming in Fellwood from Classic, right, where you get a whole raid. As long as everybody clicks at the same time, everybody's good. But yeah, so they made some changes there. They also made some changes to some of the daily quests that are out there. There was one daily quest which you had to loot an animal on the ground. I forget it, something was it. But the problem was is that they were global loots, or sorry, global spawns. So basically, as soon as one person clicked, nobody else could click it or it despawned on you. You needed 8 of them. And the spawn rate was very low. So I remember doing that. Luckily for me, on my main, I got in there right around reset time. It was very quick. It took like all of 2 minutes. But yeah, then I took my shaman through.
I did it after the hotfix, and it took about 2 minutes.
Gotcha. So I did it on my shaman before the hotfix, but after the initial turnover, and it took me a good solid 20 minutes, 20, 25 minutes to click 8 of them. And that's with like group hopping, jumping into groups, like getting 1 or 2 from that group. I ended up just like camping one spawn, which I knew where it spawned, and just would like click it and hopefully it worked. So, but yeah, so tons of hotfixes in that area from a treasures perspective. Some of the quests are just sort of probably just a little bit of like balancing around actually seeing a bunch of people in the zone now and how the zone reacts and things like that. So, so that's sort of the hotfixes era, for Corthia and some of the early stuff. Next up was a fun one, and I actually saw this after I did this. So it has to do with the actual skip, the introduction skip to Corthia. So after you go through the first Corthia quest line, which takes about a half hour, 35 minutes.
No, it takes way longer than that. What are you doing?
That's true. It actually took about an hour, hour and a half, I feel like.
So
it's very long. It's through a bunch of different zones, a bunch of different escort quests, but you're like following an NPC around in certain areas. You're right, actually does take a very long time. After you do that once, you can essentially skip all that introduction, and basically your next character, you can be dropped right at the start of like doing your daily quest in Corthia, basically have Corthia unlocked, everything you need there. So doing that, though, you miss out on one important thing, which is the final quest, as you go through the long quest chain, basically gives you a bunch of materials, which includes like, I think, an armament, some Stygian embers, which is what you need to upgrade your Sanctum of Domination gems, and like a war chest that I think can contain some shards and stuff like that. So you basically miss out on that by using the skip. So like your alts basically miss out on 10 Stygian embers and some rep and anima and stuff like that, which sucks, right?
Yeah. At the same time, like I did the skip on my warrior before this post came up. I'm not overly concerned, to be totally honest, because it is just the Stygian Embers. Like the 10 Stygian Embers will be slightly annoying. But for everybody except the world first kind of people, by the time that alt cares about Stygian Embers, right, it's going to be loaded with them from just doing weekly stuff.
That's true. It does. It seems like an oversight, which
like, you probably should have, like, instead of skipping that quest, it should skip you to that quest.
Right. Yeah. And then you turn that in and then you open up the zone and the dailies and stuff like that. So the skip was definitely nice. It was a very nice sort of thing to put in because that intro is long. And then I don't know if you had any bugs doing it, but I had the bug where the guy you escort from the mall into Corthia just stopped and didn't move at like the first stop point. So the only way to reset it was then to die, abandon the quest, and restart it back at the mall when you like fly over to that area.
I had the one where you first use Venari's flight point from Corthia back to her place in the mall, where she would just stop and stand there and not give quest credit.
Oh, really?
Yep. apparently it was something with like other people interacting with Venari could cause her to just stop.
Sucks.
But I ended up just like abandoning the quest, picking it up again, and it worked fine the second time. So
not too bad.
All I needed to do was take the flight point a third time. So
yeah. Yeah, luckily I missed, I had a couple guildmates who had some of like the crashing bugs in the scenario, which yeah. I feel like would have been more egregious, like would have been worse, right? Because you have to restart that scenario, go all the way through it. So yeah, the only issue I had with the scenario was after doing the part, after watching the cutscene with Sylvanas and Tyrande, you do that part where you have to like run to the Winter Queen and then see the cutscene with Anduin stealing it and run back. For me, as a Horde member, I was sharded into a shard with literally what looked like 1,000. It was probably like a solid like 40 or 50 Alliance players. So I spent about 10 minutes like dying and rezzing, so just so I get a little bit closer to the quest turn and follow.
That's what you get for playing with War Mode on.
It's 10% more resources. It's 10% more resources.
Does it even apply to rep from Archivists?
I don't think so, no. But it's 10% more. Come on. The number is higher. I have to do it.
No, you don't.
So the skip, you know, you miss out on the rewards, but not to I think, Emelson, to your point, not a huge deal. So only a couple more as we run through these. This is actually a lot. Happened.
Yeah.
Next up is Blizzard did release a quick hot fix to basically reset the old Covenant quest thing. So you get a one-time, I don't know if it's an item or a one-time use thing to basically
it's not like an item. Basically they reset the, like, it's whatever Covenant you are now, it's as if you have never been a part of a different Covenant, meaning that you can do the easy swap from one Covenant to another.
Yep.
And the funniest part about this is the reason that they did it, because they do it because the Covenant changes meant that people were swapping Covenants again. They did it because the Covenant swap NPCs from Ouroboros were in the scenario, and people were just like, I don't know, autopiloting through, clicking yes on everything and accidentally swapping Covenants, which I find fucking hilarious. That to me feels like just desserts for like not reading anything in the game, just relying on AAP to do it all for you. But that is so fucking funny to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad
that Blizzard did like the hot fixes so that they're not totally screwed, because it would be a lot less funny if they were actually screwed. But because they got the ability to go back right away for free, it doesn't, now it's just funny.
Yeah, it's just like they did it not because of a like a design decision or like, hey, we realized we made all these changes and we'll let you swap freely. It's like, oh no, a bunch of people made mistakes, so we'll fix it that way, right? And yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, because I saw, I mean, they're not only in the scenario, but I believe they close in around in Ouroboros when you talk to like Bolvar and do the stuff in Ouroboros too. So they're like closer there, which is just, read the dialogue box, people. Read it.
When it asks you three times if you really want to swap Covenants, maybe click no if you don't actually want to swap Covenants.
That is true. So now you've like you said, we've reset your quote unquote, I guess they call it betrayer status. So now it seems like you've never been another Covenant, so you're easily swapped to your other ones if you're going to. Kind of upset I swapped to Kyrian, but I guess it wouldn't matter. I would have to farm the renown anyway. So then only two more, and then we get into sort of the actual topic for today. I feel like we're flying though anyway. There was a bunch of hot fixes that came out on Friday. For the Shards of Dominion tuning. So basically this is the new like gem system. I think we talked last weekend with Lincoln about, just about like the shards. They're the set bonus idea, for this, or tier set idea for this, patch. They did a bunch of tuning to them. Basically what they ended up doing, sort of long story short, is pretty much every one of them got changed. Every gem got changed. However, they pretty much end up in the exact same spot they were. So what they've done is basically smooth the curving. So like you don't start at such a high power level with your level one gem. You kind of slow, like you started a little bit lower power and you slowly curve your way up to the final gem. The final gem, level five, didn't get really any stronger or weaker. I think in a few cases they might have made some final number tweaks, but
the frost damage gem got nerfed on its fifth level as well.
Gotcha.
The unholy and the blood ones did not.
Gotcha. Okay, so they did rain and frost
actually a little bit. Buffed the unholy speed gem, so that's fun.
Want to go faster? I think the leech gem also got buffed too out of blood. At all levels. Did, so
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Thanks. Lincoln mentions it. He was responsible for the frost DPS shard being nerfed. So
why is that one nerfed? I don't understand it.
From an ad perspective, more than likely.
I guess. Like
I'm assuming increased all damage, so
Because none of the raid encounters, I guess, kind of.
Sylvanas.
KT has it. Sylvanas, I guess, does too, up until the last phase. Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's a really weird one to me.
Mythic Plus, I think, was probably the bigger issue, like Lincoln mentioned.
That's probably true.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, shard, like just sort of curve smoothing, I think, across the board. You start with a little bit lower power and increase at the end of the day. So probably a good change. That way you actually feel maybe the gem upgrades now as you get, you know, you start a little bit lower and work your way up. So, which is sort of like a direct difference than, they didn't do this with the, what was the last thing we upgraded? Were essences upgraded, right?
Essences were upgraded.
And essence, like the upgrades were fairly like low, if I remember correctly, right? Like there wasn't
there was a huge variance. So like Conflict and Strife had pretty like rank one was not that much worse than rank three.
Yeah.
But then you had ones like Null Dynamo for tanks where rank one and rank two were totally worthless. Gotcha. And then rank three added the only effect that you cared about.
Gotcha. Okay. So that was a bad example.
Well, I mean, for the most part, you're right. Like the essences did have like not a lot of power gain from rank one to rank three.
Yeah.
But then there's a couple that had like really big power gain.
Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, gems, whatever. They're still tuning. I don't even know if they work, to be quite honest with you, at this point. So we'll figure it out maybe next week. So and then the final update for this week was, I think, yours, called The Legacy of Bronn. And I know that we have a question this week, actually specifically directed to me about Bronn. I actually don't know anything about this. Was Bronn what is going on?
On last weekend, I talked a little bit about how Bronn was like sitting really high for Brewmasters, and then they made it look like we were going to go live with like a really kind of severe bug where like every tick of Rushing Jade Wind and Spinning Crane Kick was going to generate a stack of the buff to summon him.
Oh, Jesus.
So Brewmasters could summon him in 20 seconds, not, you know, 75.
Yeah.
So that went live on Tuesday, along with another bug that meant if you were running the Harm Denial Conduit, your Expel Harm did 21 times its normal damage.
Yep.
Including the damage, I believe, from Gift of the Ox Orbs it didn't include Gift of the Ox Orbs, but it turns out by just multiplying the damage on it by 21, it's real big. But anyway, the Bronn thing was fixed in about a day, but through the course of it, like, I've run and rerun the Sims so many times now, and Bronn is still not currently 100% working for Brewmasters in SimC. So something to be mindful of when you look at raid bots and stuff like that. Bronn currently sims slightly behind Marileth for Necrolords, but it's actually like not all the way up to speed and is still stacking too slowly after they fixed the bug on live and then also subtly changed its behavior from what it had been previously. So it's kind of a mess, but yeah, it's been a wild week because we went from like Braun being 250 DPS more to Braun being 700 DPS more.
Jesus.
To Braun being now like Sims at like 30 or 40 DPS lower. But he really probably should be about 100 DPS higher. Mm-hmm. Once we get the Sims in order, it's a whole big mess.
That's a roller coaster of a gosh. I'm excited. I think that's probably a good just sort of, what is the word I'm looking for? Not analogy, but a good like snapshot of how this patch has gone, I feel like. Where like it goes from like you realize one thing on a Monday, they hotfix something, you figure it out for Tuesday, they hotfix it again. By Wednesday, you're now totally confused about how this should work or what they're doing. And then like you basically throw your hands up until Friday when they get done for the week and you're finally like, I can spend a couple days maybe trying to figure out what they're trying to do here with this stuff. So
yeah. So this bug, the original bug that went live, had been introduced on PTR like a month and a half ago, right? Yeah. And it had been fixed. So we weren't gonna, like, my initial Sims didn't use it. Because it had been fixed. And then it got reintroduced at the last minute. And then it got fixed again, but now it behaves slightly differently. It's just a absolute roller coaster.
Yeah.
And the worst part of it is, like, the main reason to stay Kyrian for me was because of how good Braun was. And he's still going to be, like, slightly higher. But now I have to decide if I actually want to swap Necrolord. I don't think I do. I really don't think I do. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's just... Oh, Blizzrad. Yeah, it's been that's funny. A roller coaster. So that's why, I mean, now I understand why, like, a bunch of people were talking about Braun in even
Mystery Rush. Yeah, at that point in time when he was, like, 700 DPS ahead, people got, the memes crazy. Went off.
Little crazy. Awesome. Well, I think that's it from a recap perspective for this week. If we miss something, we'll probably pull it back in. But I think what I wanted to spend most of this episode about was really just talking about what's new in 9.1, right? Which, to be fair, we have an hour. We're probably going to get through this in like 15 minutes. But we do have some very good questions at the end, so we can talk about that. But no, I'm kidding. So I guess the big thing, the first thing on my mind was just, you know, how is Corthia from your perspective? I mean,
I did not realize how much better the Maw was going to feel by having a mount. Like, not even just the new Corthia zone, but going back and doing stuff in the Maw. Much nicer when you can mount.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
Especially because as a tank, I cannot get dazed off of my mount.
It's so broken.
So I can just run through things and not worry about it. And like, I wouldn't have been able to do that the first week of Shadowlands. Let's be totally clear here, because that would have gotten me killed even as a tank.
Right.
But once the raid came out and I had raid gear, like, I could totally have been just walking through seas of mobs and been totally fine. And like, I could have gone, I did go and I did the Beast Warrens every time it was up for mm-hmm. the mount. Never got it. I didn't go and do Twisting Corridors. I got to like the third floor and then stopped because they announced that just everybody was going to be able to mount in the Maw in 9.1.
God, I got my Twisting Corridors mount probably like 2 weeks before that. So like I made a concerted effort like to basically spend an hour. We'll really do like one layer each night for like a week and a half. And so like that's how I spent like an hour and a half of my play time every week for like, you know, 6 weeks was like do a whole layer, you know, or sorry, not 6 weeks, but like a week and a half, like 8 days, do a layer, be good, you know, and move on and sort of grind through it. So yeah, mounting feels real good everywhere. Like yeah. Real quick, real nice. I agree. I think the Maw still feels congested, which I don't like.
Corthia feels very small.
Yeah. No, Corthia is like a landmass. I meant more like the Maw and like mob density still feels okay. very Like, yeah, it feels like the idea would be is like, well, our covenants now have more power here. Like, we're starting to push back in the mall. You can mount now. But like, it feels like we didn't really push out back in. It's just like, we get to mount now. Like, all the same mobs are there. Like, the same density's there. It's still like, I went to Perdition's Hold just to check it out. It's still terrible to go in there for anything. And then like the new area by the raid entrance is like, even it's like Perdition's Hold 2.0. It's just as bad. So, that part is a little bit, a little bit sucks, but yeah, I mean, I can definitely see like how, if you didn't get a mount before, mounting in the mall, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
On the other hand, there is now basically nothing to do in that's worthwhile in the mall. At least if you came into 9.1 with a little bit of Stygia stockpiled for the new vendors, which I did because I had been taking it from the vault.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I did mall dailies for a while, even after I maxed out rep. So I had like something like 30 or 40,000 Stygia all banked up. So
I have 4,000. So.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. I bought one socket and that was it for me.
Gotcha. I ended up fully buying sockets on two of my characters, on my paladin and my monk. And plus having 40K after that. Plus having 40K after that because I thought I might need more for like the shaman. So I had enough to get a whole nother set on the shaman if I needed it. I like sockets. I also, the numbers go up. We know that.
I think, you know, it would be different for me at least. If sockets were worth more like what they're worth on, you know, basically anything else, as opposed to like 1% ish each instead of 1% ish total.
Yeah.
But
that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. So you think Corthia is small? I've heard that sentiment from a lot of people, is that Corthia feels very tiny. Like,
yeah.
Like almost like half the size it should be, I feel like.
I feel like it's smaller than Mechagon.
Yeah. I would agree.
Which even with is flying, wild to me. Like, Mechagon and Najitar both came out in the same patch, right?
Yeah.
With a whole new system that was more, I think, more involved than the domination socket stuff. And I don't know. I'm curious to see what the dungeon's going to be like, you know, next week. But it really feels like there's not much in this patch besides the raid.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to end up being the raid and the dungeon. Like,
yeah,
that's it. And you're right. Like, like the 8.2 patch, probably the closest one to this in terms of like similarities. And yeah, we got two new zones that were both bigger than Corthia. They rehashed a lot of the ideas of like assaults now with stuff in the mall, which those are interesting.
I don't like, let's talk about assaults for a second, because I actually have some minor complaints, and these are minor complaints. I don't like the do four quests then do this long RP thing with whoever is leading the assault, like doing the Moonberry stealth thing.
Really?
If it were just that, or I guess my main issue is that depending on how many people are around, doing the first part can take a really long time, doing the first four quests.
Yeah, I did the first four. I did the first four last night for the Venthyr one, and it was a cluster, particularly with war mode on.
You're a brave soul doing that in the mall with Stygia.
Yeah, so luckily everybody behaved themselves, so it was very, very chill. Nobody really
tag things.
Yeah, I can't tag things. And then the only nice part about doing it like that was for the Venthyr one specifically, you have the one quest where you have to have some little bug eat a bunch of corpses.
Yeah.
You don't have to tag the corpses. So I literally went to one area and clicked one corpse, not realizing this would happen, but my bar went from 10% to 80%. In one click because of all the the mobs in the area around it. So I was doesn't seem this bad. But yeah, I mean,
and there's the quest in there for kill 30 mobs.
Yeah.
Literally just kill 30 mobs, where I had to, because of how many people were around, had to run around looking for just one or two mobs to kill at a time.
God.
That one took forever for me to do.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, it's also something where I probably should have just joined a group in the group finder and been like, hey, let's share quest credit. Because low-key, that's also the secret to doing the final stage of the Venthyr one quickly, where you have to like go through all four mirrors, which, side note, even if you're a tank, do not attempt to ignore things on the other side of the mirror, because you cannot take mirrors in combat, and it will let you walk through and off the edge.
Yes. So
so guess who had to walk back to the Venthyr assault from Ouroboros?
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh no.
I walked off the edge, and where my body was, I either could take res sickness or I could hearth.
Oh no. That's because awful.
Some of the mirrors you can't even get to. Like, there's no way to reach them until we unlock flying, of course, but we haven't gotten flying yet, so there was no way to get back to it.
There is I did this, so I didn't realize you couldn't take them in combat. That's what happened yesterday to me then, because there's one where you enter the mirror and you have to you enter the mirror and the thing you have to click is like above you, and you have to go upstairs that are in front of you and like circle back and click one, right? It's like on the thing. And I remember clicking it miles behind me and just rolling off the edge, and it was like, I'm gonna slam dunk right into this mirror, and I hit it and went right through and then landed off the edge, dude. I was streaming. I wonder if I have a clip of it. If I do, I'll send it to you. But
there's a gate thing that pops up on the gateway on the mirrors when you're in combat.
I thought it was a graphical glitch. I'm not gonna lie, I saw that, by the way.
So that one does have a graphical glitch. That one is shown. So if the mirror is like vertical like this, then normally the grading is like this.
Yeah.
The grading for that one is like this. So I think the grating actually is like a wall. It won't let you walk through it. I don't know for sure, but that's the same one that happened to me. And I totally just walked through and off the edge.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. I did that. I rolled right through it. Luckily for me, the weird thing for me is after I like didn't fall off the edge of the world there, I hit like a or something like really far down off a cliff. And when I released, it actually gave me the ability to res just as the spirit healer. So I didn't have to take res sickness. I could res and then like run up the big hill and take the portal again. But
yeah, no, it put me. So what happened to me is I landed somewhere. So it sounds like you landed on terrain that's not reachable, basically.
Basically.
And
yeah.
I didn't. I landed on terrain that was reachable and was at the bottom of Venthyr. So I like. I had to go and get my corpse, which was way down there. And I mean, maybe it would have been possible to get back to the mirror, but I just hearthed.
Gosh. Yeah. Yeah. That was, that's funny. I didn't realize that was the case. But yeah, I mean, I think, and I think Lincoln mentioned this too, like that one, the end of the Venthyr one sucks because it's like there's a loading screen through each of these mirrors. You got through four of them. So there's eight loading screens. Yeah.
Apparently,
that one.
You do share group credit on that one. I didn't do it in the group, but apparently you can just have like one person go in each and do the thing and then come back.
Oh yeah. I did it in a group, but we did everything together. So like we went into every mirror together. We didn't sort of test that. So I probably should have.
So I got to do it on my warrior, and probably my paladin, before reset Tuesday. So I'm going to try it. Worst case, it doesn't work. And I have to still go through all four.
Yeah, I did basically, I did both of them last night, on the shaman and the monk. So the funny thing is I don't like Korthia in general, I think is small. Like finish off on the assaults. I don't actually mind the whole quests into like little RP thing. I think it's better than like filling a bar and then fighting a boss, right? Like,
I agree with that. I think it's a lot better than the fill the bar stuff for the N'Zoth assaults, for example. Much better than that. Do you think that having to do all four quests, like, I almost want it to be like a fill the bar, but the quests are there and give like large chunks of the bar. But then if you like just can't get the fourth quest done because there's too few spawns and too many people, you know, you just instantly get it done with other things and it's fine. Having to do all four means that like if you can't find any more druid spirits to rescue, You just got to run around looking for druid spirits until you find that last one to turn in.
Yeah. Now I can see it both ways. The Moonberry thing for the Night Fae Assault I think was pretty cool. The Revendreth one, not like so. The Revendreth one, I feel like.
Yeah,
and weirdly, like I thought we'd actually have to fight something instead of just clicking Mactic, but yeah, maybe yeah. I don't know. It's not too bad. I think it's a little bit more interesting than just filling the bar, I can definitely say like yeah.
Is a lot
if
more
I was in
than filling the bar, I think the Venthyr one basically has that kill 30 mobs quest that is basically fill the bar, but worse.
Right. Yeah. No, that's fair. But yeah, I think so. Getting back to a little bit more on Korthia, I think you're right. I think Korthia does feel very small. It's very quick. Like the three dailies that you do, which is really generally the only like daily repeatable content you have, take all of maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is good and bad. I think it's, I don't know. I could go either way. Like I think the problem that I had like with 8.2 and like Naz Jahtar and Mechagon is like some of that stuff could take like Mechagon could take 30 minutes on its own, particularly if it was like the fine, like loot the chests was always a rough one, or like the three rares was always tough too. And like those were just frustrating to do. So glad it's a little bit shorter and the zone being smaller, because like I think Naz Jahtar would have been like the one that's closer where you have like a couple of dailies to do in Naz Jahtar, right? Yeah. Similar to Korthia. Naz Jahtar is just a bigger zone, right? So it took longer to traverse, and there's just more time in the traveling, which I don't know. But yeah, Korthia feels small and it feels somewhat empty, if that makes sense. Like because it's so small, so, like, there's only like one.
Mechagon had like stuff all over the place to do. Like all kinds of things happened in Mechagon.
Yeah.
Korthia, in some of it, it feels like we haven't figured it all out yet, but a lot of what there is to do in Korthia is basically just like do dailies, kill rares, collect treasures.
Right.
And there is the stuff. Have you done anything with the rift yet?
So no, other than going in the rift for the Night Fae Assault, right? Cause there's the quest you do in the rift for that. I just actually, funny enough, I just got my first rift stone thing.
One of the things that I think actually adds a bit to Korthia. So like Korthia, the zone, the new zone in 9.1 is not just Korthia. They added basically this whole layer to both the Maw and to Korthia called the Rift. And there's no real explanation for why it exists that I've seen. I'm waiting for a novel video, to be totally honest. Maybe I missed it.
Okay.
But I don't know why it is here or why we can enter it or how it factors into anything. But it's there. And so people are doing one of the most time efficient things you can do for Archivist Rep is get a raid group and go to the very south end of Korthia, use a collapsing rift stone, which allows your entire group to enter the rift for 15 minutes. And then you kill a rare that's there in the rift. You all hearth back to Keeper's Respite in Korthia. And then you go and you get Zoval's chest, which you have to drag across the Maw, which is a cool little event. And that guarantees everybody in the group gets a collapsing rift stone or two.
Okay.
So you can then start doing this like very reliably, instead of having to hope someone gets lucky and gets a rift stone drop. Then you just go and you loot chests inside the rift. There's four in Korthia that give a bunch of stuff for the archivists.
Gotcha.
But it's like there's rares and treasures and things like that inside the rift.
Okay.
But so it's like it on the one hand, like Korthia is very small, but there's this second layer to it. But also access to the second layer is like time limited. You've got 15 minutes when you enter the rift to do stuff. Although once you hit tier 4 with the archivist, you can just like buy personal keys to get into the rift. and gotcha. Like go in as much as you want, basically.
Gotcha. So. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I've seen the portals that you can click on to go in, but I haven't actually gone in.
Yeah, you need like a green keystone to go into the portals.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, they definitely don't explain that very well.
No, like I had no idea. Like, I actually think it's kind of cool to have some things in the patch that just are discovered that people just find. But also, I would have liked some explanation for why this exists, even if it were just like, oh, after you get out of it, you know, maybe there's a quest from the archivist that like explains what it is or something. Because if anybody's going to know what this is, the archivist should, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, no, agreed. Cool. Yeah, I will have to check that out. I know that there's a bunch of stuff, not a bunch of stuff, but there's stuff you can do in there for like one of the hand mounts, which is the thing that I'm most excited about is those hand mounts.
Have you seen them doing rock, paper, scissors?
I have not yet. I've seen a couple. Special.
Oh, really? Guys got lucky and got one pretty early. And he was like, I hated this mount until I saw the mount special, and now it's the best thing ever. Because it plays rock, paper, scissors. It's great. And it changed. It's not just like playing rock, paper, scissors and always picking the same one.
Yeah.
It actually like picks a different one. So
that's so cool.
So you can literally like do rock, paper, scissors with someone and just like both of you hit mount special.
That's awesome. I'll have to check it out. So, but yeah, so that's sort of, I guess that's fair. It's an interesting area to explore. Anything else on Corthia before we sort of, I wanted to just talk a little bit about Torghast and a couple other things before we get to the end here. But anything else on Corthia that you wanted to point out?
So I mentioned like when you asked at the start of the episode, you know, how the patch had been, and I said, chill. The reason I said that is because you don't need to do either of the reps in Corthia. Like, I'm doing the dailies because they aren't very time intensive and they aren't frustrating, unlike doing stuff in the maw.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need to do anything in Corthia to raid in 9.1. Literally, there's two rewards that are relevant to the raid. Sockets, which you can get from Torghast, which we're about to talk about. And then there's an eye level 220 domination socket piece for your armor class one. And so that can help you potentially fill in a slot and get a three set earlier than you otherwise would. Gotcha. But that's it. That's all there is.
Yeah, it's pretty light, I'll say. But yeah, you're right. Chill. Very chill.
And that has meant that, for example, this is probably the first patch in a long time for WoW that I did not spend my whole weekend like doing chores.
Oh, really?
Patch.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I did, I think, this weekend was, the daily stuff, did the assault, and then I actually did like a bunch of Mythic Plus on the Shaman just to get that gear. So,
yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, then let's talk a little about the new Torghast. So Blizzard, of course, released an update to Torghast. A couple of quick things is like they're adding additional layers. So now we have layers 9 through 12 coming in. So above 8. And they've 9 was released this week, 10 with next week's. And then, you know, the rest are sort of one new one a week. They've added a little bit some changes. So there's only 5 floors now. Basically, there's still 1 and 2 are still the same. So 1 and 2 have mobs on them. 3 will be your sort of vendor floor. 4 will have mobs, and then 5 will be a boss floor. So you basically end up with one less mob floor, which is cool. So it runs out of being a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
They've added a new like blessing and curse system, which I think we'll talk about a little bit, which I think is really interesting. So like your curses, of course, I think they're going to add ones as you get higher in difficulty.
Yeah.
So they'll be very similar to the old torments like that were a part of certain layers.
A lot more interactive than the old torments.
At
least the ones we have right now. Some of the ones that they had on PTR, I don't know which made it live and which didn't, but some of the ones they had on PTR were pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Or just like boring. Like the old torments that like increased mob HP or made them do more physical damage. Or everybody's favorite, you take 10% of your max HP as fire damage every 5 seconds.
Oh my god, dude. Soulforge Heat, get the F out of here.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Yeah. So yeah. So they've done that. They've made some changes there. And then I think the biggest thing is they've added a scoring system, which is essentially like you gain score by doing different things. So by clearing more mobs, you get better score. By doing it faster, you get more score. By not dying, you get more score. By like, I've seen things too where like if you don't take an epic power, you get like 10 points at the end.
Yeah, I had that happen because I took nothing but corrosive dosage and like random powers to make me move faster.
Yeah.
And free 15 points.
Yep, yep. And then the points sort of add up at the end of your, after you kill the boss on the fifth floor, and you get sort of a ranking of 1 through 5, I think, right? And yep. You have to at least hit, I think you have to at least hit a 4 to unlock the next level layer, right?
Yeah.
Or is that
the UI4, what we need to do right now is kind of not clear, because even if you get a 4-star, it still shows the next one is like locked. It doesn't change the message that's displayed for it or anything like that.
Right.
But yeah, that is in theory what we need in order to do floor 10 next week. We have to do floor 9 and get a 4-star, which I think they've really improved the scoring from where it was on PTR, at least in terms of like clarity and feel, because having like the score breakdown of like, oh, you get 15 points for this and 15 points for that and 20 points for this and 30 points for that is like really highlights the different ways that you can approach it and like do things. Cause I had no idea. Like I ran into the no epic power one by accident. But yeah, that's definitely something where like maybe if I get offered like a bad epic power or one that I don't think I'm going to use, maybe I just skip it because I'm going to end up with the free points from that, you know. Some little things to think about on that front. And then also explaining exactly what the threshold you need to hit for each tier is makes it much clearer. Like you need 160 points to get 4-stars and 180 points to get 5-stars.
Yeah.
So having that so clearly laid out there is, I think, really, really big improvement over how it was on early PTR.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that I don't like, and maybe this is something I can improve on the system, is like I think the between floor score screen that pops up, number one, if it pops up, it's great. Sometimes it doesn't even pop up. Like it's up for a second, you can't read it. But there's not a lot of good feedback as you go through the floors as to where you sit score-wise.
Yeah.
Right, which I think is like if you're shooting for like a floor 5 or sorry, a 5-star, like knowing on by floor 3 where you sit in terms of like score wise, I think would be helpful. I don't know what if they can even do that interim sort of like scoring system, right? Like projecting your points or whatever, but I think that might be helpful in terms of people wanting to hit certain things, right? I'm assuming there might be a weak aura that eventually comes out that helps sort of identify this stuff, but yeah, I mean, I think the scoring system's cool. I think it's fun to like push. Like, I think I hit a 4-star or sorry, a 3-star the first run I did with my buddy, and then like so we were like, all right, we got to go like a little bit fast. We saw like where we were missing points, and like we died because we thought we were a little bit too awesome. We weren't as awesome.
Yeah, deaths are like -20 points.
Yeah,
like, deaths are like, if you die, you get -20 points. Like after the first death, it doesn't matter. But like the first death is costly.
Yeah. So those definitely hurt. So it's it was cool that the scoring system I think adds a little bit to it. And then tied to the scoring system is like the new, not tied to it, but sort of alongside is also the new tower knowledge and like talent tree piece, which is basically just like the horrific visions talent trees, just not copy and pasted, but like basically lifted and shifted to sort of work with Torghast, which you get to like, now you get like at the end of every run, you get tower knowledge. You can use those tower knowledge points to get upgrades, which basically make like, you get like an extra blessing. So you get like an extra buff at the start of your run, which will be active. You can auto loot, which is the best one. If you don't like, I saw somebody tweet about like
breaking things.
Really? I didn't notice
breaking things. So basically, there were people that picked up that upgrade that if you didn't loot the mob, you would get a like special item. Like, you remember the player XP items?
Yeah.
That you could get mailed to you from doing dungeons and stuff like that. It was like that, except that you couldn't loot it from the mail. So it's just permanently in your mail, unable to be looted. As well as like some people were reporting that it caused them lag and stuff like that. But I have a feeling that's probably more of an add-on thing.
Yeah, trying to read the mail.
The WoW thing. But That's yeah, funny. It was. So that one is not totally free, but
it's still very as a ranged individual. Well, I guess I don't play much range. Like Misweaver is ranged, but I hate clicking. Hate clicking to loot mobs or like running backwards that somebody killed something behind me, right? Or something ran away and died. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, so you have your upgrade tree now with Tower Knowledge. The one thing about Tower Knowledge I think is kind of annoying, and I don't know if they fixed this, but I know that there was a post up earlier this week, particularly on WoW, and I heard some people talking about this, is that your Tower Knowledge is capped per week. However, there's not like a running increase. So like, I forget what the cap is. I think it might be around 200, 250-ish, right?
Yeah. The way it looks like it works, and I speculated about this based on the PTR tooltips way back when as well, is it looks like it works like Valor. So like can get like 200 something. Next week can get like 500. The week after 750. You know, that's the way it looks like to me. It uses the exact same tooltip explanation as Valor does.
Gotcha.
So that is my understanding of how it's going to work. But speaking of which, so you mentioned that you got the auto loot thing. What else did you get from the Tower Knowledge? Like what route did you go?
So I went 1-1-1. So I did Tower Knowledge I did Tower Knowledge Blessing and then like the speed and haste increase while you're empowered. And then I got one of the ones on level 2 and I forget what it is. I think it was a remove a curse one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my current build. I just tried to use points. I didn't really
min-max it. I went deep in the blessings. I got 2 blessings next week. I'm like 20 points off of being able to get the third one.
Oh, nice.
But I actually really like how blessings played out.
What's the second one? So I know the first one is like a stacking buff you get for killing, right? Is that how that one works? The rampage one?
So it actually varies from wing to wing.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I'm trying to remember what the second one was on the wing that I did. I know one of the ones that I had was like, the tooltip was very vague and it said, rescuing souls is worth much more, but also decreases your stamina.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the tooltips, even for the buffs, like what it does is it triples the value of all of the souls you rescue. So I was hitting like over 100% ability and stuff like that. And then it also pairs that with every soul you rescue is like minus 1% stamina, except that the buff is implemented wrong. And it's minus 1% of your base stamina.
Oh my god, so it's like nothing. So it's
I had like minus 30% stamina and it was removing like 80.
Yeah, 80. Oh my god. Hilarious.
So it's basically free. That was pretty cool. I wish I were playing something that actually scaled with primary stat in terms of damage. That would have been nice. But
that's funny. That's hilarious.
That one was neat. I'm trying to remember what else there was.
Yeah, like the one that I got, the Rampage one, which is like, you get a stacking. I think it's a stacking like damage buffer. Actually, it might be movement speed and haste again. Like the empowerment, but it's like every mob you get one stack. It's like worth like 4, I don't know, like 2 or 3%. The next stack is like additional one. So, yeah. And it's got like a 12 or 10 second duration on it. So, the blessing system seems cool. It's just another progression, right? Like Tower Knowledge, I think is interesting. Like I'm always a proponent of like clicking points into things,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's why the old talent trees, even though they were pretty much figured out, are so cool to me, right? It's why I loved.
Sorry to interrupt, but one of the things I really like about the classic talent trees, at least some of them, like we've had this conversation before, some kind of are bad, but at least some of them have a lot of things while you're leveling where it's like, I would never take this talent for a raid. Oh, yeah. But while I'm leveling, it's a neat decision. Do I take the one that does more damage? Do I take the one that like maybe lets me be more efficient with pulls and like pull more with before I have to stop and eat and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Because of talent tower knowledge not being relevant for any high-end content, really, it does have that same kind of like, well, instead of following a guide, I'm just going to read what these things do. and like think about what I want. And I think in that, in terms of that, it's like great success. And as in comparison to the horrific vision talents, which people basically figured out, like, here's the way you min-max it, because you need to min-max it to get your stuff optimally for raid.
Right.
It ended up being something where I did look up in 8.3, you know, okay, what talents are people going to be most efficient about being able to actually get a five clear?
Right.
And that isn't happening here, like, because it's funny, because as a result of it not mattering, I am actually more engaged with it as a player than I would have been if it did matter for raid.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of the few times, not few times, but it's one of the times where, like, I've read tool tips for something, yeah, like, I didn't do a bunch of research on beforehand, right? Like, I went in and was like, I know tower knowledge is, like, so to be fair, I forgot about it. So I did both wings on my monk and then went to do the quest for it to turn in the box. So I was like, ah, well, we're here. Let's just run both wings real quick and turn it in.
Yeah,
I forgot all about it.
I got really crappy powers my first run on the first floor. Really? But I had the quest in the first floor. So I just ran back out and turned it in and, like, then went back.
That's funny. Yeah, no, yeah, I didn't even turn it in on my monk, forgot all about it. And then, like, once I got it, I was like, oh, this would have been so cool to, like, mess with. So when I did a Torghast on my shaman, I, like, after the first one, ran out and did it. But yeah, I mean, it's fun to, like, click the buttons. Like, the idea is, like, you're eventually going to get all these anyway. I don't think you really need these things. Like, maybe to start to complete, like, your 11s, layers 11s and 12s, like, you might need the powers. But, I mean, I can't
see. The blessings will help, which, like, the blessings are on the very first row.
Yeah,
those will help you get through the 11s and 12s, but I did 12s in Nathria gear on PTR. They haven't changed. So it will be easier, of course, if you do the tower knowledge stuff, but you could go in without any talents whatsoever and get a 12 done.
Gotcha.
There is one talent. I'm going to contradict myself and be like, you should definitely get this talent. You can't get it yet, but you can get it next week. And it's the one that lets you do an extra floor. You get a 5-star. So what that does is, yeah. So doing that extra floor is where you can get socket and conduit drops.
Gotcha.
And that does require that you 5-chest it, or, you know, 5-star it. Mm-hmm. But and I have no idea how good the drop rate on stuff in there is. I only know that you can get things from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely something that, like, I'm not going to be running Torghast over and over again to, like, 5-star things to get it, but I am expecting to be able to pretty reliably get 5-star, and, like, maybe I'll get just randomly YOLO a socket every week or two from doing that.
That would be too bad.
As, like, a side bonus from doing Torghast.
Yeah. That would be too bad. Interesting. Yeah, I forgot about that one. A couple of people in my guild were, like, asking about it, so I actually looked it up. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, I mean, Torghast, I think the new version of it is a little bit nicer, a little bit less time spent in terms of, like, clearing mobs. The scoring system makes you at least care a little bit about what you're doing and sort of moving through it.
Yeah.
And the tower knowledge is, I mean, like we said, like, that type of stuff I think is always cool.
I think I wasn't super hyped about the Torghast changes, but where it ended up, I am actually kind of looking forward to going in on my warrior and paladin. And messing around with it. Although, I really, really wish that they had added, along with this, some new Torghast powers to go with it. Yeah. I still really want them to just do, you know, start doing bi-weekly Torghast power dumps. It's like, we're adding 3 new powers this week. They're for, you know, warrior, mage, and hunter. And this week we got priest and paladin and warrior again. And just, like, dump new powers in, because why not?
Yeah, I mean, the cynical person in me says, like, whenever they mention, oh, we're going to add to this or make changes to it, like, over the course of an expansion, I always take that with a grain of salt, because, like, it seems like with most systems, they just, like, here's what you get, run with it.
Like, that's, and they, right, don't... being, like, a key example where they, like, iterated on parts of the system, but didn't really iterate on the Azerite powers, where we got, like, one new power per class in 8.1, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm assuming, like, anima powers are going to be very similar to that, where we have, but I don't know. I still think I had fun doing Torghast this week. Like, it was fun to go back in there to mess around, so that was cool. Cool. Anything else on Torghast?
No, I do think it's in a better state. I still do think, I think the biggest thing, like I said, is just I want them to keep adding new powers, just like throw new powers in every couple weeks in the hotfix.
Yep. That's fair. All right. So one final topic before we get into some of our final sections was just actually it's kind of two pieces, but the first question is, did you raid this week at all on the monk?
No.
No, you didn't. Okay.
We did not raid this week. What we did instead is we had a strategy meeting on Friday.
Gotcha.
To go over mostly heroic, but also a few of the first mythic bosses. So that everybody was on the same page for it. But also, like, my guild raid's on Friday.
Yeah.
So we are, like, I definitely punted on Sylvanas Phase 3 because we have such little information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have the bugged pulls from Phase 3.
But
that's it. And I don't know how much faith to put in that. So we are going to be looking at, like, Sylvanas videos from Tuesday and Wednesday to figure out what we're doing on Friday and Sunday.
That's fair.
But yeah, we did a strategy meeting instead of raiding this week. And some of that is because nobody wants to go and do Stone Legion Generals again.
We actually raided. We did our raid Thursday this week just because Tuesday patch day we weren't sort of expected to get it. Plus, I think we haven't raided on a Thursday in literally like 4 months, I think, at this point. So it sort of like get people back in that mode. And we just did four, right? We did the last four, or the four to Sire, and it was fine. I mean, it was fine. I played Mistweaver on, you know, Shriekwing and Sludge, and it was whatever. So yeah, I'm more excited for the new content. The funny thing to me is that I realized today that I literally didn't progress the final three on my Mistweaver, so I have no idea how to play. Like, I'm very much the type of person where, like, I need to go through progression to learn, like, when to hit my buttons. And because I didn't do that, like, I have no idea when to hit my buttons. So, like, every pull is an adventure. Like,
yeah. So we did, when we cleared last week, or, you know, worked on it last week, we also did just one night last week instead of our full two nights.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the end of the batch.
Yeah.
I definitely did notice one thing that I think we're going to change for next, or for the end of this tier, is really tell people not to swap to Covenants that are bad in anticipation of the patch. Because we definitely had a couple people that swapped to Covenants that are good now, or good in a week when they get their legendary or whatever.
Right.
But were bad in 9.0, like noticeably extremely bad.
Oh god.
And that definitely, like, that looking at some damage breakdowns on Stone Legion Generals definitely hurt a bit on the damage front. Damage wasn't why we didn't kill Stone Legion Generals, although it might have made it easier.
Yeah. That's funny. But cool. And then I guess the only other final point was, I don't even know if you have any comments on this, but what were your thoughts on, I guess, 9.0? Like, as a patch, as an intro patch, How do you think it went?
It's such a weird thing because I think from a raid standpoint, it went great. PvP, I can't speak too much to, but I did way more PvP than I had, you know, traditionally. Mm-hmm. And I actually really enjoyed doing RBGs, and I am planning, like I said, I'm going to plan to do RBGs on my monk this tier and try and get some PvP gear like that. But the other systems that were introduced, like world quests, are almost not a thing anymore. There's not a lot of world content. Like, I didn't do them all. Let's be totally honest. Yeah. To be 100% clear, I got a single socket on my monk, and that's it. So I did do the Venari rep grind eventually, but not the way most other people did. At least at the CE level. And then the only other systems really are Torghast and Covenants. And Torghast, I don't want to spend too much more time on, but Covenants still have a whole rest of the expansion to play out, really. So I feel like 9.0, the way that 9.0 is going to their credit, they didn't really fuck people over with Covenants in 9.0. There weren't any like major swings that completely redefined what was the best Covenant to play. The closest was probably the nerf that Hunters got to Wild Spirits. But yeah, it was, I think the way that 9.0 is ultimately going to be judged is on Covenants, and we have a bit to go before we can do that. Raid was great though.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I mean, I did look this up. It was the longest non end of expansion patch ever.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think it was like at the number of days it was live. So very long time. But I think it was probably also one of the best opening raids, which is, I think, to its credit, like Denathrius is like a great boss. Yeah.
Denathrius is like the main thing I'm going to miss from 9.0, because now that 9.1 has arrived, Denathrius is gone. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, Denathrius no longer exists in the game. You can go and do the fight. But after this week, you're not doing the same fight anymore.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, I mean, it was, it'll probably end up being, I think in my mind, personally, it'll be a good patch, regardless of the other systems. It's just that because of how good that fight was and how much fun. I think the raid in general, like, Stone Legion notwithstanding, the other fights are good. Like, they're not bad fights. Like, I think they've
missed a lot of, like, medium fights, in my opinion. Some of that's because some of them are just, like, very basic tank fights.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like very medium fights, but there are some real, real good ones. Like, I really like the tech mechanic on Dark Vein. Shriek Queen is a top tier, like, early boss.
Oh yeah.
Huntsman was fun, you know. Hungering was boring, but you know, you can't win everything. But like, yeah, I do think it was a very good raid overall.
Cool. So yeah. So I think maybe we'll do maybe a little bit of deep dive maybe later on 9.0. But yeah, it was okay patch. Okay first patch. So
yeah. Actually, one other thing. The other way that 9.0 is going to be judged, and to a lesser extent 9.1, is by actually Final Fantasy. Because of the length of the patch, I know there are people that went and checked out Final Fantasy and stuff because of how long the patch was going on. They just didn't have anything else to do. Even Raiders didn't have anything else to do.
Right.
In 9.0. So people were going and checking out Final Fantasy. And if Final Fantasy really takes off as we head into the new expansion for that game, and continues eating WoW market share, then I think that is going to be part of the legacy of 9.0 as well.
Yeah. They just took
too long. That's more of a like byproduct of the length of the patch than any other facet of it.
Yeah. That's fair. All right, cool. All right, well then, those are the topics for this week, I think. Covered most of the 9.1 stuff, the new stuff. Gave our thoughts on it. So next up, two sections that we don't normally, I guess one section we don't really talk about, but two other sections. We've got the lore corner. So today, really from a lore corner perspective, the only thing I really wanted to, it was really more of a comment than really a deep dive on anything. But it's sort of talk about a little bit the cutscene between Tyrande and Sylvanas. So if you guys have, you know, spoilers, if you haven't done the introduction, this is a part of the introduction scenario to 9.1. As you open up Korthia, you can skip ahead. We'll do something to yell at you, but skip ahead like 5 minutes and it's not going to be long, right?
Timestamps on both the audio version and the YouTube version of this episode. So you can skip to the Q&A if you don't want spoilers. This has been your warning.
Your only one. So they released this cutscene as a part of the, or it's a part of the introduction scenario where, you know, Sylvanas and her forces are assaulting Ardenweald. And, you know, we as the heroes have come to defend it as a part of that assault on the, it's not the World Tree, but whatever the big tree in the center of Ardenweald is. They're trying to get the sigil there. So Sylvanas and her forces are attacking. We're defending. There's like an interesting moment between Tyrande and Sylvanas where Tyrande comes back as, of course, the Night Warrior now, and sort of tries to kill Sylvanas, and turns herself into a rocket ship after Sylvanas turns herself into a banshee, and then
Rocket Tyrande.
Oh, it's so I read a bunch of, watching it, of course, and I read a bunch of the comments. I feel like it was just late. Like, so, and here's, I'll explain the scene and then we can talk about what we thought about it. But basically, like, Sylvanas and Tyrande, they're fighting. Sylvanas does this thing like any bad guy does. It's like, well, the assault's finishing, time for me to go. And she like turns into a banshee and starts flying away. Tyrande like looks at her, then goes, Alun, give me strength or something. And then turns to a rocket ship, tackles Sylvanas in midair. They fall to the ground, tumble. Tyrande ends up on top of Sylvanas and starts choking her out, which is very weird. And then all of a sudden, like, the power from Alun as the Night Warrior, like, Tyrande's power starts draining, and Sylvanas like pushes her off and then doesn't kill her, because Ysaerj comes in. But in any event, very, very like weird that, like, I hate this idea, because, like, here's the thing is, like, so the idea that I hate is that, like, when a hero gets an upper hand on a villain, and then the hero loses power just to let the villain get away.
Yeah.
That hero has to actually kill that villain eventually in this story. So, like, the idea here is that if Tyrande doesn't actually kill Sylvanas, like, it's such a, it doesn't work with me in terms of, like, the story, right? Like,
you know what this means for Tuesday, right?
What's that?
There's an encrypted cutscene from when we finished the Sylvanas fight.
Yeah, I know. Is it Tyrande that killed? Like, I don't know, but, like,
I don't know. It's an encrypted cutscene, but, like, that's the foreshadowing. Is, like, Tyrande gonna kill Steel?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's just, it's so weird that, like, Alun, who, again, I don't understand, like, the lore of Night Elves, but, like, she, like, loses, she doesn't give enough power to Tyrande, then kill Sylvanas when she's, like, right there. Tyrande uses all of her power to, like, turn into a rocket ship just to catch up briefly. And maybe that's the foreshadowing.
Side note, the rocket ship thing is the derpiest thing I have ever seen in a WoW cutscene.
It looks so, it's like if I was the artist where I was like, I drew like this really pretty Tyrande face, and then I took like, I drew a square at the bottom and then put like little brush strokes there and was like airbrushed it. It was like, rocket ship. Like, it's so weird. I don't know what to think about this. It just seems like hopefully they comes full circle and they close this off, but the story itself was just like, I don't know. It just seems like, yeah, it seemed weak in terms of the story and what they're trying to portray, because, like, I feel like Tyrande had the upper hand, could have killed her, and then by some miracle, she lost power.
Right.
And Sylvanas was able to get away. Right. And then that Sylvanas didn't.
Yeah. That's definitely a trope I am not a huge fan of like this Deus Ex Machina kind of thing of like, Alun just like failed you. Sorry, Tyrande.
Yeah.
And then Sylvanas gets away.
Yeah. Which, I mean, maybe they're setting up like the whole like, vengeful Tyrande, or like the fact that, like, well, I don't know, because like now there's a bunch of other theories where it's like, well, because Tyrande is being fueled by vengeance, then Alun doesn't align with what Alun wants, so she like took the power because Tyrande is now no longer trying to like stop her people from being attacked, or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's now like all about personal vengeance. So I don't know, man. It was a very weird, like, the choking scene, of course, there's a bunch of memes about that, which is just,
yeah,
the internet's a weird place, man. It's just a weird place.
I don't know, man. And coming right off the tier where we had on like a bunch of like horny stuff in the Soul Render fight descriptions on PTR. I don't know, man. Maybe they're not reading too much into it.
Yeah, maybe it is what, I don't know. Maybe it is what it is. But
so CM Handler in chat says, I think the cutscene did well to show Sylvanas' power falter a bit. That's the first time we've seen her vulnerability. That is true. That is the first time we've really seen someone like actually beat up on Sylvanas since Wrath.
Yeah.
Um,
but But at the same time, I think that like beat up is a very strong like
word for what happens.
Yeah, like I mean, like the fight itself between the two, I feel like was very well matched. So like, I don't think either of them. I guess Tyrande did get sort of the upper hand towards the end of the before she turned to a banshee. Sylvanas turned to a banshee and flew away. But like, that's the only point, right? Like the whole tackle and choking, it felt more like Sylvanas was just like buying her time, like being like, all right, well, I'll let this happen for like 10 minutes and then we'll go next. So, I think it is what it is on that one. We'll see the rest of how this lore plays out. I'm interested to see how this story ends. Apparently the whole quest chain's available out there. So if you really want to know the ending, you can. I'm going to wait, see these cutscenes, see how the rest of the Covenant campaign plays out. But this is just an interesting one to me. If Tyrande doesn't kill Sylvanas, I'm going to be a little bit upset, I feel like, or a little bit not exactly excited about the rest of the story. So,
yeah.
But cool. That's your little lore corner for this week. And now we get into the Q&A section, which I'm really excited about today because we actually got some good questions. Like very good questions. And I feel like only leaving 12 minutes to get this done does a little bit of them a disservice, but we'll try and answer these, I think, as best we can. So again, Q&A section, you know, you guys can send your questions into Emelson and myself. You can ping us on Discord, tweet at us, yell at us somewhere, maybe on Peak. I don't know if you read the comments to your stuff. I don't really read comments there, but
I do.
You
can yell. I get actually pinged by that every time I get a comment.
Nice. So. Nice. Well, I get an email every time you leave a Wowhead comment on any of my guides. You can ask questions there. We'll ask them here. But in any event, we've got three questions today. First comes from Kate, who at the time had the name Bronze Saleswoman in Discord. And they ask directly to me, Anomaly, when are you joining in and becoming Anomobron? And well, never is going to be the answer to that. And now with the nerfs, doubly never. Never going to be a Bron person to even start with. So,
what's your monk now? Is it still Necrolord?
No, it's Kyrian because I'm going Cold Arms.
Okay. Okay.
Going. That's why my name in Discord, yeah. CT Anom.
Got you. Yeah. We use the real CTA over in Brewmaster Lands. Bronze Call to Action.
Oh, no. This is the legendary.
No, use the real CTA.
Oh, really?
Yeah. None of that fake legendary stuff.
I'm all about that borrowed power, Emelson. All about it. but yeah, Kate, thank you very much for the question. Not joining the Bron crew anytime soon. So next up, we have a question from Panini or Peo. And they ask, it's actually a really good question. This is a serious question. Is it purely the job of the community to proliferate information about the game and how to play at a mid to high level? Or should Blizzard be actively trying to educate new players and help them perform at the mid level? That's an interesting question.
I agree with the latter. Like Blizzard like should be putting things in the game to help people move up to like the kind of mid level. The absolute lack of information, especially with the way that like end tier heroic fights have been tuned and stuff like that, on how to play your character in game is just astounding, because it's not even like, this isn't something like I just finished Darkest Dungeon recently. That's something where you can reasonably, based on the information in the game, figure out how everything works and like put together a comp based on how all the stuff works and all that. You can't read the tooltips in WoW and get anything useful half the time, you know?
Yeah.
And even when you can, it's still, even when you can get something useful from a tooltip, sometimes it still isn't enough because of undocumented interactions between other abilities and just things that are quietly overtuned in your kit and stuff like that. Things like most people would never, for Brewmaster, expect to use Expel Harm rotationally, but it's actually super worthwhile to do for DPS, because if you press Expel Harm while you have multiple Gift of the Ox Orbs up, it does more damage than pressing Tiger Palm for less energy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think the thing that sticks out in my mind when I read this question and I was like, yeah, this is a really good thing, is that particularly with Mistweaver, Enveloping Breath, which is the ability that gets added into your Celestials at 58, I believe, or 56, one of those, where like if you cast, while your Celestial is active, if you cast Enveloping Mist on someone, it'll spread Enveloping Breath to, you know, up to 6 targets around that individual. It's a large amount of healing. It's not in the default raid frames.
Oh.
And there's no indication that it actually, like, you don't get a spell. Like, when you get a new spell as you level, there's, like, maybe a pop-up or something. There's no pop-up when you gain this power, when you ding, and it actually becomes unlocked. And there's it doesn't update the Celestial tooltip either, because it's a passive ability that gets added to it. So to actually figure out what Enveloping Breath is, you would have to randomly find it in your spellbook at the end of the mystery piece and be like, what is Enveloping Breath? And then figure out that it's tied to your Celestial. So what we found, which is absolutely crazy, and it's why I actually made a video and put it on my YouTube channel about Enveloping Breath, was Volk was doing some analysis on a bunch of different logs, like for Mistweaver and other stuff, and found out something like, I forget his number, something like 30-ish% of all mythic logs from Mistweavers had zero Enveloping Breath healing. So a third of your mythic raiders, like, or logs from mythic raiders, maybe not a third of the raiders, like, didn't have any Enveloping Breath healing, and it's a massive power increase to our Celestials. So in my mind,
I don't even know what that is, to be totally
honest. Yeah, well, yeah, it's just you have a Celestial out, you want to cast Enveloping Mist as much as you can to spread this massive, it's like a throughput cooldown, right? It's just a ton of throughput healing.
Yeah.
And like, the idea is that, like, yeah, I agree, like, Blizzard needs to do a better job of explaining this stuff, because if Blizzard thinks a mid, so to me, mid-level player is someone who is clearing heroic and dipping their toes into mythic, right? Like, I think that could be very much a
good, like, mid-level target. Something like, I think this is a place that WoW can learn a lot from Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, as part of leveling in Final Fantasy, you are required, like, it's part of the campaign quest that you have to do to level. That you have to go and do basically proving grounds. Like, you have to do the proving grounds to progress, and you have to do them at like level 20 or 30 or something, not, you know, level 90 or whatever it was in WoD.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think Blizzard does an absolutely terrible job of explaining their game. I think tooltips is like one way to look at it, but then there are other ways to look at it, like where they just don't explain certain bugs, right? Like in today with Mistweavers, there's a bug where Resplendent Mist and Jade Bond, which are two conduits we have, can't be used together. So yeah. Jade Bond gives you cooldown reduction whenever you proc Gusts of Mist Mastery, right? Or Mastery Healing. And then Resplendent Mist is a conduit that increases your Mastery Healing. And what they did, they put this in the patch notes, which is surprising, but they said Resplendent Mist now works with Invoke Chi Ji healing, because the healing from Invoke Chi Ji is based on your Gusts of Mist. The problem, what they also did was they made it so that Invoke Chi Ji gusts now also reduce the cooldown of your Celestials, which is good. Both good changes. So now you're thinking, put that together, reduce cooldown plus more healing. No. If you have Jade Bond socketed, Resplendent Mist does not work on the healing from Chi Ji. So like, it's a wasted conduit socket, and they don't tell you this stuff. So, I mean, I think
a lot of that, honestly, is just the continued insistence on building these big borrowed power systems. Like, any new system is going to have bugs. That's just kind of a fact of life. The fact that they load us with so many of them, there are such big parts of our kit for the expansion, means that those bugs end up being pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they don't do a very good job of being, and this probably I think comes back more to like communication by Blizzard and how they're not the best at it, right, in general with their player base. But I think the other thing is they don't set the player base up to play the game well anymore. And I think, I don't know if it's just to your point, there's too many borrowed power systems, too many new systems. They can't build that sort of baseline, here's how to play the game tutorial, right? Because I think they do, to be fair, Exile Reach and the new introduction to playing the game is good, but like how to play your class well is not, like that introduction is not good.
Yeah. So. And that's something where, I mean, we are well past the point that we were in Classic or TPC where rotations were more just artifacts of the abilities that you had than anything that were specifically designed. We know that they designed rotations now.
Right.
They are at the point where they should start adding hints to the rotation to help make them learnable. Because if you're just staring at, like, if you're level 60 and you're staring at your action bar for a spec you haven't played yet, like, I have some vague idea of, like, okay, that's a filler. Like, the spec is probably a builder spender, because most of them are, to be totally honest. Like, so, like, kind of organizing my stuff around that, but even that leaves a lot out. Like, Fury Warrior, you don't want to press all of your cooldowns together, because unlike most other classes where you want to use cooldowns together, because one of your, like, main cooldowns increases the rage you get, and if you use your other cooldowns with it, you'll overcap on rage and stuff like that. So it's like, that's the kind of thing where that's actually a bad example, because you can totally just, like, do that in world content, realize you're overcapping on rage and stop.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it,
but I, just like the, I actually think Fury Warrior is probably a great example, actually, of a rotation that's very easy to just figure out. Like, you don't need a guide to figure it out. You need a guide for some of the talents, because some of them are traps, but you don't need a guide to figure out the rotation for it.
Mm-hmm.
Something like, you know, Affliction Lock is like the polar opposite, where you do need a guide to figure that out. And if you're doing something that's not the like actual way to play the spec, you're gonna suck. Like, people play a lot of people have an affinity for Affliction Lock because they like the dots. They like putting dots on things and letting the dots stick them down. If you just, like, dot things up in a raid as Affliction in 9.0 at least, that wasn't where your damage came from. Your damage came from, like, doing big Malefic Rapture ramps and stuff like that, which is totally different from what most people would expect.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and that's sort of the problem, is like, there's no sort of, like, beginner guide that's put out by Blizzard, or sort of, like, to your point, like, a proving ground, right? That's like, here's how you should interact with your spells, right? There's no, like, from a healing perspective, looking at that, there's, like, you can infer based on, like, cast time and mana costs and actual healing that a spell does, like, what's your slow heal, what's your fast heal, you know, what's your AoE heal, right? Like, you have that sort of ability, but I think, you know, sometimes the tooltips aren't good when describing that, right? Like,
yeah,
a lot of times with Mistweaver, and, like, you're thinking, well, if I Soothing Mist a target and then my Vivify and Enveloping Mist become instant, that must be how I heal, right? I must Soothing Mist every target and then I get a bunch of instant casts and a great healing. But it's like, well, the problem is that Vivify's cast time is your GCD. So, like,
yeah,
casting it with Soothing Mist or not casting with Soothing Mist doesn't really matter. Oh, and Soothing Mist has a weird 1 second GCD, which is different than the 1.5 in the base game. If you even realize what a GCD is, because, like, Blizzard doesn't explain, like, I don't know if they might do it in hints. I haven't turned on hints in a while, but, like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, back to, I think
healing is one place that Final Fantasy does pretty badly at explaining things in tooltips.
Yeah. I think healing in general is hard to, like, explain.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, it's based on experience.
There's a lot of, I just remember there being a lot of confusing tooltips on White Mage in Final Fantasy.
Gotcha. Yeah. But I guess back to Peo's point, I think Blizzard does need to probably do a little bit more in terms of educating new players. And I think they rely, I don't know if they rely too much on the community to do this, but I think the idea is that
they rely too much on the community. I think when you broaden the perspective of this beyond just, like, learning your rotation and into things like learning how to do a raid fight, you know, even a lot of normal fights just have mechanics that I don't think are reasonable to ask people to do without boss mods. Because they just, like, rely on knowing that an overlap of three specific mechanics is coming up. And if you don't have timers, and a boss mod telling you what's happening, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, you might, you will be able to figure it out, you know, four or five pulls in, but maybe, but it's such a, like, nonsense thing. And then you add in stuff like Stone Legion Generals, where the overlaps change from pull to pull. I think one of the biggest things they could do is, like, improve telegraphs. If they improve telegraphs, that obviates the need for a lot of boss mods and weak auras to make fights playable.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they do that, the more accessible the encounters become. And, like, I every fight that is hard because of bad telegraphs is just not fun. It's frustrating. You know, the classic example of like standing at the edge of a circle on the ground and still getting hit, even though you're visually not in it because it doesn't exactly match up.
That's so frustrating.
That's just frustrating. Like dying like that is just really, really tilting. And it doesn't actually really make the fight easier in a meaningful way to just have the graphic match with the actual effect. But it does make the fight a lot less frustrating. More like telegraphs and stuff like that is, I think, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this was actually a very interesting question from Peo. But yeah, I think Blizzard can definitely do a little bit more in terms of their onboarding to max level content experience, I'd say. I think their onboarding to playing WoW is good. Like Exile's Reach, I think, does a very good job of like taking a brand new player that's maybe never played WoW or never played an MMO, getting them into sort of how the game works at that level. But once you hit max level, like if you're not reading something, like you're gonna get lost. And then then you end up in some sort of toxic situation where someone who did read the guides lets you know that you're playing terribly and not the nicest way.
Yep. And so. Kate did have a follow-up question to this. I'm going to paraphrase. Yeah. And basically asked, you know, why a lot of WoW players have such, you know, basic things that they can do to improve by like huge margins. And I think we kind of answered that question is the game itself does not provide an interface that is very learnable. It's difficult to learn from playing the game. So there's a lot of things that just like a large part of raiding at a high level, for example, is being able to like effectively look at logs and make weak auras and stuff like that. That has nothing to do with playing the game, but because the game is just not good at telling you things, it's super important to be able to do. And that's like not nearly as necessary for something like heroic raiding, but the problem is endemic of just like the game not providing a surface that's very learnable for you. Like you just are going to bounce off it a lot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think it's game feedback is the reason. It's like, unless you're actively engaging with resources outside of just the game, you'll never figure out you're doing something wrong. I mean, I guess never is a strong word. Like, I think you may eventually figure it out, but it's going to definitely take some time to get there. So yeah, but yeah, I think that's why it's just like people, you know, they play the game and that's sort of the way that they've always like, and that's how they've approached every other game because every other game's given them enough feedback to not have to go quote unquote min max. Right. And I think,
I can't think of another game where I went and looked up a guide. I think the only other game where I've looked up stuff outside the game to figure things out is probably Morrowind because some of the quests there do not tell you what to do. And that's, you know, a 20-year-old game at this point.
Yeah. And to be fair, I've definitely done it. I've done it personally in other games, but I think it's been more of like not like it's been to the point where I'm at the game where it's not like, how do I do a basic thing? It's more of like, all right, I want to now do the like Factorio is a perfect example of this. Like I want the perfect red science production balanced like thing of factories. Yeah. What does that look like? Because I don't want to figure out the ratios myself. Right. Yeah. I just want the perfect balance
like,
there.
If you tried to get in like Supreme Commander is this reasonably old at this point RTS game that still has a big fan community. And if you want to start playing that competitively, like you're gonna be looking a lot of stuff up outside the game just to learn how, you know, what are the stats of this, what are the, you know, because there's a lot of that game where playing it at a level that can like trash can the AI. You can just like do the macro level stuff, but you have to start microing things to do well competitively, and learning what units can even effectively be microed is a whole other thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I think that's the biggest difference is just that feedback loop and the fact that Blizzard I think somewhat relies on the community to sort of explain what they're doing and even to a lesser extent help them fix issues, which I guess is a good thing, but I think a lot of times they put things out there and don't expect things to people don't expect the ways that people break things, right?
People have always joked that the WoW UI is made by the community, the real WoW UI.
Yeah.
And the base UI has gotten better in many cases by absorbing popular add-ons. But there is definitely truth to that.
Yep.
Sure. And I would go as far as to say, like, the WoW community helps build the boss fights, because the way most people experience the boss fights is not by themselves. It's with the aid of boss mods.
Yep.
And they change the fight.
No, I agree. So, awesome. But
we are going well over here.
Yeah.
So 7 minutes over, and Anam's got some kids to go and take care of. So we are going to go ahead and wrap up this podcast. Hope you all have enjoyed listening. And if you have, you can go and support us over at patreon.com/PikaSerenity. That supports this podcast, all of the guides and stuff that are up on Pika Serenity, which I know I still have to update the Brewmaster Covenant stuff. It will be done in the next couple of days once we get finished figuring out all the nonsense with Bronn. All the other work that we do over on the Pika Serenity. And of course, if you don't want to or aren't able to contribute through Patreon, you can always come and join the Discord and come and hang out in one of the many lounge channels with, you know, people that are playing the same spec in the game as you are, or the same role. Brew Lounge is one of the best tank places. Also the best lounge. But one of the best tank places in the WoW community. So, but that is going to be it for our episode today. Thanks again for everyone for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.